Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see. My, oh, my. Oh, and look over there.
Wow, is that culture? Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong.
Las Culturistas calling.
Wow.
It's a morning episode. We've never recorded in the morning.
There are a lot of firsts happening today. This is our first morning episode. Oh, well, for you, it's the morning. But back in the day when we would go into, you know, downtown LA, let's say, or every now and then when we would go to when we would go to the studio, those would be sort of morning episodes. And how do we ever do it? I really can't even, I don't have the sense memory of us like getting up in the morning. Mm-hmm. I know that it happened. I just don't know how we did it.
But remember when we do 3 episodes in a day?
Girl.
The marathon that has.
The marathon that has, the true like overextension of labor that has.
Girl, when we were in LA just for a couple of days, we were like, we have to fit in everyone in the city. Oh, and we'd do 3 episodes in a day, 2 days in a row, and then be exhausted.
Yes.
And
yes.
Mad at each other.
And I just want to say the reason we're, just for transparency for the reader, the reason we're recording this during the day is because I texted my sister and our hot producers and I said, I need the mental health night. I'm sorry, y'all.
He needed a mental health night. And that's because I believe you're overworked.
Girl.
I'm just going to say it.
Girl, you are really breaking ground with this.
Wow.
You are the first to say. I'm kidding.
I feel like y'all are doing 5 weeks in a row, and that is pandemic only culture, SNL culture, because that would never happen.
But you know what I wanted to say? This is something we can talk about because I actually, unless you don't feel comfortable talking about this.
I feel comfortable about talking. You'd be shocked how many things I feel comfortable talking about.
Well, we have to talk about this. For some reason, you said something earlier that made me think about The View and you were just blocked by a View co-host.
Well, I'm so happy that you brought this up and sort of teed this up because I think this is
the story.
This is a story. And not only is it the story in this podcast, but it's also become a trending story in the culture, which to me is always like something happens here and then cosmically, it's like the fates decide that we're going to get a response from the culture, capital C. I get rock hard.
Yeah.
So last week on the podcast, we sort of, the 3 of us, Bowen, Sam, and myself, by the way, what a great episode.
What a great episode, Sam.
Oh,
love him.
So we had a thrill of an episode and we sort of touched on Meghan McCain. And I said, well, if you really listen to the content of what she's saying when she trends, you'll notice she constantly makes it about herself. Mm-hmm. It's always about her. So now, a few days later, I see that she has blocked me. And I'm like, that's interesting because I've never once added her ever, never talked, never tweeted at her, only said what I said on the podcast. So I reached out to a source that
I
know. I reached out to a source and I said, yo, Meghan McCain blocked me. What could be the tea on this? And this source said, oh, absolutely. One of her gays told her. And then he said, in a parentheses, chills. And I said, yeah, a chill ran up my spine when I thought about what it must be like to be one of her gays. So then I was like, oh, she blocked me, whatever. Then she gets on The View this week and says this stupid shit about how it's crazy that I, Meghan McCain, co-host of The View, don't know when I'm getting the vaccine and I'm over Dr. Fauci and Biden needs to fire Fauci and get someone in there who understands science. Mm-hmm. This is barely paraphrasing.
No. You're basically quoting her.
So basically she trended for being an idiot and making it all about herself and just being that kind of spoiled person that cannot help but make this situation about her. Because it would be one thing if she's just like voicing a frustration about vaccine rollout and about like the plan of the vaccine, because I get that. But to say I, Meghan McCain, co-host of The View, must know when I'm getting the vaccine is just so tone deaf in presentation of your argument. But that's her.
I'm sorry. She gives off like only child vibes, but she has like, you know, 5 siblings.
She has many siblings, but, you know, I believe she believes she's the favorite. You know what I mean? Like, whatever.
I don't know. It just feels like she... The whole thing, the reason she keeps trending is because she is speaking with, like, zero self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just... She just catches herself in these, like, moments of, like, pure solipsism where she's like, my reality is the only reality. And my title as co-host of The View just, like, makes it so that you would think that I would have access to the vaccine.
Or entitles her to, like, more information. You know what I mean? It's just, like, it's crazy to say that out loud. But then it's just so... It's so in line with what her deal is that I had to laugh because it wasn't even like we were reading her down
for
something that was inappropriate, like didn't comment on anything but what she says and how she presents her ideas, which is very self-centered and very spoiled. And it does come off this way. And, you know, I didn't say anything about how it's hilarious to watch her say these things with her hairstyle looking the way it does every day. Oh. I didn't drag her for her styling.
Ooh.
And, you know, if her gays are the ones putting her together in the morning, then I say those welcome to the resistance, gays.
Now, I feel like there is such a culture war happening among the queers where it's like, oh, Hell's Kitchen gays versus whatever gays. But I feel like the real sort of the first... thing we have to like rally around is really kind of vanquishing these Meghan McCain gays. I mean, there's at least like two of them.
There has to be at least two because one has to be doing the hair, the other has to be doing the makeup.
Right.
So basically it's like, we know there's at least two Meghan McCain gays out there. And we should also say at this point, she's resigned from the board. She's resigned from the board of Las Culturistas.
It's just Abby Huntsman?
I mean, I'll have to check in with Abby about that because I don't know if she'll want to stay on the board of directors of Las Culturistas now that Meghan McCain has resigned, because I'm assuming this is all a resignation. I'm assuming her blocking me, and I'm sure... Because here's the thing. It wasn't just me. You also went.
No.
You went off. So maybe she blocked Las Culch too. Who knows? I didn't dig deep.
This is just my general philosophy now when we talk about people on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I think, what's the worst that can happen? Like with Diane Sawyer, with Justin Timberlake, with Meghan McCain, it's like, I take a shit next to them in the bathroom. Like, who cares? Like, I don't have to, like, I will not be forced to really work with these people in a way that I feel like cornered into, like, you know, like, I'm not going to like have to like sit down with any of these people and be like, well, sorry about those things I said, but I guess we better get to working on this like award show presenter bit. Like, you know, like.
Yeah. I mean, unless you get on The View or something, like, and then at that point, it's like, if either of us were ever on The View, I would turn to her and I would look her deep, dead in the eyes. And I'd be like, ask whatever question you have. Because at that point, I this is the thing though. Everyone that you just mentioned, we didn't say anything untoward about them. On this podcast, we respond to things that happen in the culture. So if you put your foot in it and you're part of the culture, you become fodder, bitch. You become fodder, girl. And I can't say, if you become fodder, that's your funeral.
That's what you are. That's your funeral.
If sometimes all they are is fodder.
Fodder.
And... Luke, you are my fodder.
Luke, you are my fodder.
I believe it goes, Luke, I am your fodder.
I think you are my fodder because Luke is fodder now because Luke is in the culture. Luke got his foot in it.
Luke got his foot in it. All I'm saying is I don't feel bad about any of this because ultimately it's like, and I texted you and I was like, after I saw that she blocked me and I was like,
yes,
I was like, were we like disrespectful? And you were like, girl, no, she's completely self-interested. And then I thought about everything she's ever said, because yes, she is like anti-Trump, but she says some things where I'm like, God, like she really dies on this. She's so pro-gun in a way that's like so strange to me. And I'm not saying like people can't be pro-gun, but she's like, angry whenever the topic of like gun rights comes up. And it's like, to ignore the fact that there needs to be a conversation about gun ownership and gun usage in this country is, to me, insane. And she also goes off about abortions. She's like militantly pro-life to the point where it's like, what is it with pro-life people where they can't understand the argument that this is different for every woman? Like, I understand that you yourself are pro-life, but it gets to the point where it's like, you would really see laws passed in this country that would restrict abortion access for women in this country who aren't as privileged as you, who aren't in the positions that you are in, who may need to have this done for the life of themselves or the baby. Like, it just is crazy to me, these like pro-life conservative women who then want to, you know, blanket like what they think for this entire country. It's just so inappropriate. And she is that. And that's to say nothing about a litany of other issues that she takes conservative stances on.
The fact that you are concerned about whether or not you said anything, about whether or not we said anything disrespectful about her, is like such a trap. Because, I mean, this is someone who is like volatile and whatever. I mean, she's just someone who like constantly is so easily perturbed by things that like it's not about anything we did specifically. It's about the fact that she is in this like mode of existing to she's waiting to be like incensed all the time. That's it. And so I don't know. And she's also, we don't align on anything with her politically beyond just like basic things that should be agreed on just no matter what. And so I don't know. I don't really feel any sympathy. Meghan McCain is like, at this point, is Bugs Bunny to me, you know? It's like she's become Bugs Bunny. And we just got to really like, I just want to kind of retroactively say that the Wendy Williams documentary, that our conversation about Wendy Williams was maybe overly like sympathetic, because this is a woman who like started rumors that like Tupac had AIDS, and that like, you know, like Diddy was cheating on like
she started gay rumors about everyone, and she knew what that was going to do in that particular community too, and she knew what she was doing.
Wendy has caused harm. Meghan has caused harm, unfortunately.
There was another thing too that she said that really bothered me, which was she came back from maternity leave. She took a very long maternity leave. And she came back and she said, you know what I actually realized? We need paid maternity leave.
Yeah, dumbass.
And everyone there was just like, yeah. And Whoopi was like, I mean, we've been saying it. And I think that they were like, cool, good that you say this now. And I'm also like, we say a lot, I think I've said a lot on this podcast, like, if someone wants to arrive on the right side of an issue, like,
great.
Whenever that happens, I'm happy about it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't yell. I'm not the kind of person that's like, wow, really now? Like, I experienced some of it with like the Britney of it all. Like, when I tweeted out, like, you know, this documentary is about a misogynist society, I got a lot of responses that were like, yeah, duh. And so I'm not the kind of person that's going to scream, yeah, duh, at someone. But this is an example of kind of what I'm saying. It's like, it's almost like things have to happen to her. People like this, like, need issues to be personal in order for them to be felt at all. And that's, I guess, my problem with everyone who's like a quote unquote traditional conservative, and anyone that's conservative anyway, is it feels like there's a complete disregard for certain issues that just are never going to affect them. So, for example, like, of course they're all going to be pro-life because it aligns with their, like, you know, religious sort of upbringing probably. And it's just like this sort of moral superiority that they all have because they don't have to actually encounter and like grapple with a reality where it would be life or death for them if in terms of needing an abortion. That's just not part of their experience. And so when she says something like that about paid maternity leave, I am frustrated because it's like, so you really needed to go through this to understand why this would be a viable thing. And I could tell that she was sort of like, this is going to be my olive branch to the liberals today. And it's like, yeah, cool, thanks. I'm glad there's someone saying this on television. But for her specifically, it bothers me when she arrives late to these issues because she has the capability to be on the right side. And she never is. Never is.
80% of the time she's just digging her heels or she's doubling down on like a stance she knows is not controversial, but she's just like very much like, I'm dyed-in-the-wool Republican from the 80s. Like, I'm dyed-in-the-wool Bush-era, Reagan-era Republican.
Right.
And you're like, okay, great. You're so slow on, like, moving along the curve that it's meaningless at this point. It's just laughable when you say shit like, wow, there should be paid maternity leave. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, no kidding. It's just like, and it's just so insulting to women, I think. Like, mm-hmm. For her to be someone who has been around for so long to only really be saying this now and saying, like, let's make an issue of it now. Like, let's make it a thing. Like, all the women of The View going forward. It's like, all the women of The View have been saying this. And again, mm-hmm. like, if people want to arrive on the right side of whatever issue, that's fine. I say this being someone that watches The View a lot and has for many years, and mm-hmm. I've been familiar with her for many years, I don't think she's very smart. I think she understands the structures and I think she understands the ways in which politics works. And I think that she has a deep understanding of how Washington runs, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, but I mm-hmm. don't think she is very self-aware. I think that she has a bloated sense of herself that interferes with an ability to be truly empathetic. And I don't think that she is a good co-host of The View. And I kind of wish they would move on because I think she makes the show very hard to watch because I think a lot of her arguments are just frustrating. And I really think that she represents going back to a time that was the most harmful, where there was a lot of inaction and quote unquote reaching across the aisle.
She is like, I think like on a producer level, they love her and they have to keep her around as long as they can because she is like the new Hasselbeck. She is like mm-hmm. the person on the panel who's like making headlines and like getting the show. Like little blips of like, not press, but just like, oh, The View's back in the conversation. The View's trending because Meghan McCain's trending because she said the stupid thing. And yeah. Meghan probably knows to like keep like flicking at that nerve, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, she's a provocateur, really. I mean, like, and not in a way that's like, and that sucks. But and because I do believe she's
and
like
her and Ben Shapiro have. I mean, they're not mm-hmm. politically identical, but they have that same instinct to like say some bullshit to get everybody pissed off.
She knows what words to use. Like, I think she's adept enough at provoking interest in her, so she knows to go on TV and call Rush Limbaugh a titan of media. Meanwhile, like, you know, she didn't say anything positive, quote unquote, about him, but it's that kind of language where someone gets on TV and says, you know, Hitler was a great man, and they don't say it like he was a good person. They said he was an influential person.
Yes.
They still know that they're using those words and that they're going to gain a reaction. I think she's good at that type of thing where it's like, I'm going to use language that insinuates something but doesn't state something. Mm-hmm. And I'm not into it. I can't believe she called him a titan of media, even if it's true that he was an influence. Say he was an influence. Also cop to the fact that he was racist, misogynist, incredibly homophobic, really started the birther thing about Obama. And like, say that because you know it's true. And just because you're the conservative voice on this show doesn't mean you have to ignore the realities of what this person was. Like, and I think that she feels that she's been so critical of Trump that she has to sort of like preserve conservative voices that she's used to because she's so critical of the new GOP that she ends up like just like really propping up these harmful figures from the old conservative stronghold.
The Rush Limbaugh thing is like kind of her being beholden to that, to like his peak, which was like not his, like one of his peaks, which was around the 2008 election where mm-hmm. her father was running against, but was the Republican nominee. And it's like, oh, okay. There is this like actual emotional, I'm going to say, tie between Meghan McCain and Rush Limbaugh, where you've been like rubbing shoulders with these people for decades at this point. And like, mm-hmm. this was sort of like the environment you were raised in, and you were like used to like listening to Rush Limbaugh when you were growing up. I just think she's a product of that.
Yeah. And also, I just feel like there's been such a movement up since his death there, especially there's been this like hero worship of John McCain. And I think it's fine and respectful if you want to, like, you know, give condolences to anyone that's lost a family member, or, you know, give respect to someone that was an American hero in that he, you know, fought for this country, was a prisoner of war, and then dedicated his life to service. On face value, I understand that. But I think there's a lot of rewriting history about, like, how great John McCain was. Because don't forget that a big building block of why we even have Trump is because John McCain made the selection of Sarah Palin and for his vice president, and normalized this sort of thing of putting a know-nothing mm-hmm. on the national stage. Because, you know, had he been elected president, she would have been, I mean, it's said a million times, a heartbeat away from the presidency. And normalizing that and mobilizing the kinds of voters that liked her directly helps Trump mm. with what he attempted to do and was successful in doing in 2016. Like, so it's just, I don't want to forget that John McCain did the things that he did in terms of creating the situation we're in now. I just think it's a dangerous thing of, you know, we talked about it last week too, where it's like, yay, Biden. It's like, yay that we don't have Trump. But remember that, like, these people were the reason why this country is in such bad shape right now. The sort mm-hmm. of just nothings that were in Washington that allowed a situation that provided Trump. I don't know. It's mm-hmm. I just the whole McCain worship thing, the fact that they're like royal figures in this country, now they're falling out of favor with pretty much everyone, but I don't like it.
The McCains being royal figures is chilling.
Well,
I have nothing to add. My brain is truly
yeah, toast. I mean, look, she's off the panel and she's the open invitation for her to come on this podcast and charm us to kill us, I think
the invitation still stands. If she can get us to like her, if we can say, oh, she's actually really cool, then we will seppuku. Specifically, this is the new layer. Is that we will take a katana to the belly.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Do you want to kill me and then I kill you?
I don't want to kill you. No, honey. I never want to contribute to your pain.
Okay. I just thought it could be fun. Like if she comes on the show and charms us and then we have to die, I think it could be fun to kill each other. But whatever.
No, that would make me so sad if I had to kill you. Even if it was a bit and we both end up dead at the same time, I don't want to do that.
We don't have to do it then.
That upsets me.
Can I ask you a question moving into more fun culture? Another witch. bitch. The WandaVision of it all.
Everyone is like, I'm honestly a little... not surprised. I'm like, wait, Agatha all along is like a thing now. Like,
it's the biggest hit in the country. It's a driver's license. It's a rule of culture. It's rule of culture. What number is it again?
4.
Rule of culture number 4. Agatha all along is driver's license.
Everyone is quoting it. Everyone is doing the memes of Agatha all along. And I'm going, what happened to like... okay, we're just gonna spoil it for everybody. Because remember, like, when Evan Peters showed up, everyone's like, everyone shut the fuck up. Don't tell anybody about this. And now mm-hmm. it's like, I mean, maybe it's because everyone saw this coming from a mile away that, like, Catherine Hahn was playing Agatha Harkness. But it's mm-hmm. like, now Agatha all along is like, it lives in this, I don't know, like, shared visual language of like,
it's become canon. It's become culture is what happened.
That's actually true. That's actually very true. Well, Agatha, all along, I mean, what do we have to add? We think it's fantastic.
I think it's fantastic. And so basically, like, in watching the show from the beginning, I knew there was something up with her. And I sort of, in reading about what she might become, like the Agatha Harkness of it all, I thought it was really fun. But the way they rolled it out, I thought was so great.
Fun.
And I loved the song at the end. And I just feel like, oh, this is why you cast Catherine Hahn. You know what I mean? You cast her so that she has something big and fun to do. And if she's going to be the main antagonist, I think that rocks. And I think it's actually really genius casting because Catherine Hahn is exactly at that point where you can buy her being cast on this show as the nosy neighbor and the comic relief. You know what I mean? Like, totally. Marvel is so huge that even though Catherine Hahn is big to us because we respect her, you know, work as an actress and we always enjoy her, you think, like, to the larger, you know, consumption community. That's gonna maybe title of app, consumption community.
I was gonna say.
Or something with Agatha.
Or fodder.
Fodder.
Luke, I am you are my
Luke,
fodder.
Luke, you are my fodder. Might be title of that. There's so much going on with
so
title of that. There's so many horses in the race.
Yes.
But I would buy if by the end she had just been the best friend all along, because we've seen her be the best friend.
Yes.
But then you realize, like, oh, no way. They know what they're doing. They know what they've got here. And her playing a witch, too good to be true.
Too good to be true.
But it's true.
It is. This is a weird comparison, but I feel like this person deserves this kind of role and this kind of context.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like if you cast, like, Judy Greer in that role and you're
exactly.
like,
exactly.
Oh, like, this is so, and she could handle, there's a model for her being the best friend, but she also has the ability as an actor to become the main antagonist, and you'd be, like, so excited about it.
Yeah.
I feel like Catherine Hahn, I'm not saying they live in the same neighborhood in the industry, but I think that, like, there's only a small handful of actors who, like, are in that pocket.
Yes.
And we love them for that. And Catherine Hahn being in the MCU in this way is very fun. And, like, now, like, it actually, like, I was reading on some stuff about how this is actually introducing horror into the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, which is coming out, I think later, like, end of the year or early next year. But that's, like, I mean, they're saying that, like, that is going to be the first. I think Kevin Feige is saying that is going to be the first technical Marvel horror movie, which is kind of fun. But, like, this is introducing, like Darkhold, like that tome. It's like, this is introducing all of those elements, where you have, you know, like, witchy spooky, which I think is so fun.
Yeah. So are you familiar with the character of Agatha Harkness?
I only off of, like, cursory, like, readings about her, that she's just, she's Wanda's, like, teacher, and she, yeah.
Yeah, she's essentially a gray area villain where in some comic series, she is a full-on antagonist, like, bad, like, kills Wanda's kids. Mm-hmm. And then in other ones, she is sort of a mentor figure and was even the babysitter for the Fantastic Four for a while.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's that thing of, like, especially in superhero series, like, it's common for villains to play on the good side and the bad side. And often see heroes be antagonists as well. I mean, they kind of dabbled in this with Captain America Civil War, where the Avengers were fighting against each other. But there's been so much talk about whether or not this is a villain origin story for a reboot of the Scarlet Witch. I don't know that they'll do that. I feel like in this beginning of, you know, I guess Phase 4 of Marvel, it's kind of better to start it off on a more straightforward thing. Like the Scarlet Witch, we're seeing her become a quote unquote witch and she'll earn that moniker, but she'll stay
Wanda,
a quote unquote good character an Avenger. And it feels like easier to swallow that Agatha Harkness is now just a new villain figure, whether or not that's just for WandaVision or in the larger MCU. But it's interesting that they bring this character in because this character just like Wanda, has served a purpose of villain in the comics and, you know, protagonist in the comics. So you still don't really know where it's going. It could go either way. I've also seen some theories that, you know, Agatha is not the main antagonist, that she's calling someone else. That maybe is why this is all happening, so that she can conjure a greater villain that will become like the Thanos of this new part of Marvel. But all very interesting, and thrilled that Catherine Hahn is ushering it in.
I love that. I love that my sister is getting into MCU.
It's the first show in a long time that I watch every episode like 4 times.
The repeat viewings for me is what's so surprising about you, that you are watching these episodes and that you are staying up till midnight on Thursday nights to watch it, and then you rewatch it. I mean, I have not done this with the show since, I want to say, I'm so sorry to say, like early season Grey's Anatomy. Like, I have not done this in over a decade. What is it about the show that keeps you repeat watching?
I was thinking about this earlier. I was like, what exactly is it that gets me to keep watching? I think to me, it's just purely fun to watch. But B, I also think there is a mystery element that I like. And I think that something about myself that I'm re-realizing is that I actually love a mystery. And I think I might start reading some Agatha Christie books, to be honest.
Girl, Murder on the Lynx, Murder on the Orient Express.
I think I would really enjoy it. Just because to me, like, I do love like Easter egg culture. looking through and being like, oh, that's that, or that means that. Like, I just think there's like an extra layer to the storytelling, which I love. And I think if I can trace it all the way back, really to the beginning of when I thought culture might be for me, Lost was something that sort of...
Lost is huge for you.
Huge for me. And it sort of pretended to be this thing that if you watch to the end, everything's going to make sense. And it obviously failed in doing that. It was an enjoyable show, episode to episode, sometimes season by season, but ultimately it couldn't follow through on that. And I think the reason why I'm loving WandaVision so much is that I feel like this could potentially, when the loop closes, all make sense in a way that is going to make me very excited.
I feel like I've asked you this so many times before. You have not seen Watchmen, correct?
No, not yet. And I really want to. It's just, you know what it is? It's just, I don't like violence. It's fine. I have to get over it. I will watch it next. I really will.
I think it's Damon Lindelof again, who
I love,
is able to actually make it all make sense and have it fit within the canon of the graphic novel. I think you would really enjoy the graphic novel, or at least like a summary of it, and then you should go into Watchmen thinking it's so interesting how, because it's like, it's a world where it's an alternate timeline of America. And it's a world, it takes place in the modern, well, not the modern day, it takes place in 2019. So yeah, modern, but still a world with no internet. It's like, it's really like the choices about the world are so, so interesting.
Yeah.
And they're so intentional, and it affects, like, it's so thoughtfully realized. And the mystery element that like sustains itself throughout the entire season. It all comes together in a way that is so satisfying. It makes total sense. You will fucking cream. You will love it.
You know what? Now that I've enjoyed this so much, I really will get into it. And there's nothing about it that I won't love. I think once I just settle into the tone.
And there's gay sex.
Love that.
And there's race. And there's a lot of fun stuff. And fucking Jean. And Jean Smart.
I know. And I do stan.
The third episode is the Jean Smart-centric episode, and it's one of my favorite episodes of television ever. And there's just, oh my God, there's just a great performance thread of Jean Smart and the whole thing. And it's like, oh my God, yes, yes, yes. Like, I got so pumped watching that episode, I remember. And you know me, I don't really binge watch.
You really don't. But
Watchmen, I watched the whole thing in like 3 days, just like supine on my couch, watched every episode. Consecutively. Oh my God. You have to watch. Get over the violence. There's not that much of it. Just watch it.
I'm also fine. It's just, you know what it is? It's just something I realize about myself is I've become much more of an anxious person as I'm getting older.
That's
like,
fine.
I didn't used to have any problem with this shit. Like, and then lately I'm just like, Sometimes I will not watch something because I know it's going to upset me or make me feel an extreme emotion in any way. And so I will sometimes watch things or start to consume things like The Housewives, like Survivor, honestly, like a lot of reality television that I can just feel like I'm watching it and receiving it and like I understand it. And so I'm able to, you know, laugh at it, not take it too seriously because it's not going to stir me in a way. Mm-hmm, I don't know what that is, but especially over the last year, I'm just not wading into waters that are going to make me feel a lot.
You are, because there's not much going on. We're just like, I was talking to someone about this where it's like, they're like, I am trying to wean off my antidepressants because antidepressants make you like help you get through the day, but you don't really need as, in this person's case, they didn't need as many antidepressants because they just weren't doing that much throughout the day to feel the need to be like shepherded through the course of the day.
Yeah, they weren't having emotions that needed monitoring.
Exactly. And yeah. So you are probably like, your baseline for like stimulus is going down. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, I don't want to be like shocked out of this like stasis that I'm in. Maybe. I don't know.
And you know what? Maybe it has something to do with the fact that, and this is again, me just therapizing myself, which is LOL, not what you do, but I'm going to take a crack at it. Maybe it's a thing of like, because I know I'm alone with my emotions, mm-hmm. I don't want them to go out of control. Does that make sense? Like, I'd rather every day feel sort of the same than every day feel like wild. Like, I know. You know what's funny? Like, I actually messaged, Nick Layman and Jackson Ricken, who are friends, I messaged them because they put on their stories that they were watching the finale of 6 Feet Under. Mm-hmm. And the way they were sobbing, I was like, I messaged Jackson and I was like, I don't think I've cried like that in such a long time. And he was like, it's honestly an emotional exercise and a release. And I was like, maybe I'll rewatch the entire 6 Feet Under because it honestly looked fun to cry that hard. I was like, wow, I have not. Well, that's not true. I wept and wept and wept when Jared and I broke up. But that was like the last time I can remember feeling that big of an emotional swing. Mm-hmm. Part of me feels I left like those emotions behind when I left New York. It's so
really?
Weird. Yeah.
Wow.
Like that. There was a very emotional era for me, like towards the end of me living in New York, when I
felt like
I
era.
Could. Yeah, that really was when I felt like I could cry at any day, at any time, and I was really feeling my Pisces moment. Now it's like I don't think I could make myself cry if I tried. I'm numb.
Really interesting.
But you are an emotional girl.
No.
Well, I don't know if you're admitting the truth.
Well, lately I've been very emotional. Because my defenses are down because I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like I left like an emotional era behind after I started this job at SNL. So I feel like I've just like really checked out overall, which is not good.
I mean, do you feel that's because like being emotional would waste time? Or sidetrack you?
Or it would just be like another expenditure.
Mm.
And like, I'm already spending so much time on other things. Mm-hmm. And why? Yeah. So yeah, it's exactly a waste of time. I did fully sob to Sudi on the studio floor last week.
Oh my gosh.
For boring reasons. But yeah, I'm not doing well.
Well, it's okay to not be doing well.
It's fine to not do well.
And I also just want to say, I don't think we were supposed to record the episode last night. I think that I felt cosmically we were not supposed to record last night. I felt cosmically you needed the break and we needed to do a morning episode so we can wake up.
Did I force? I'm sorry if I forced everyone to wake up.
No, first of all, literally, you didn't force anyone to wake up. Like we're recording at 10 a.m. It's not like I was in New York where it's hard for me to wake up at 11 a.m. Like in L.A., everyone's up a crack of dawn.
When do you wake up? What's your normal wake up time?
This is gonna shock you. Like I wake up naturally at 8 a.m.
Oh my god.
Whereas I'm telling you, in New York.
You outslept me in New York.
I was a sleeper in New York. Something about like the humidity is like my body can't live there.
Mm-hmm.
But I have been missing it lately, I will say.
Oh, maybe there is opportunity for you to return.
Well, I am coming back.
Oh, don't tell the reader.
We can't tell anyone why. But we have a good excuse to reunite. LOL.
I don't know if it's that good.
I think it's good.
Oh my God. Yes. Yes, it is good.
Well, that's a little teaser.
Oh, a little teasery.
Can I say? Yes. I can't believe we devoted that much time to Meghan McCain because you know she hears and listens to everything.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Ugh. Well, let's make this. Should we make a promise here and now?
Oh, yeah.
That we will only talk about Meghan McCain once a year.
Yeah. Okay, so we can have a once a year Meghan McCain anniversary. We sort of revisit the year of Meghan McCain. LOL, no way. I thought you were going to say, let's make a pact. We will not discuss her again.
I think it's impossible to not discuss her because she keeps like saying stupid shit.
Yeah. And she still has that damn job. And also, here's the thing too. Any conservative host of The View that was effective is gonna do this to the culture. It's annoying facet of a reality in which The View exists is that they feel they must have that conservative seat, and that person in that conservative seat is always gonna piss off America, and maybe that means that they're doing their job, but it is frustrating.
I don't know.
Girl, give me five Sherry Shepherds.
I would really love that.
I want to watch that show. Is that essentially The Talk? Where everyone's just like, I kind of know what I'm talking about. Sharon Osbourne, like,
well, you know, I think Britney Spears she's a silly goose. She's a silly goose, and we have to let her be silly on Instagram. And I think all this is she's a silly goose. And you know, she's not even sick. We're just making mountain out of a molehill. She's a silly goose on Instagram, and I for one enjoy it.
That's really good, Sharon. Okay. And I for one enjoy it. You were doing a really good Tracy Ullman as Helen Mirren before we got on. It was really good.
What I liked about the character is that she's at all embarrassed about her body.
And so many actresses,
even younger ones, have a problem
fishing out their teats. what a formative piece of culture for us, just for you and me as friends. It was, mm-hmm. I think, I remember it being one of, after Nicki Minaj and Super Bass, I think this video was one of those things that like really like formed a new bond between you and me when we were first getting to know each other, where we were like, oh my God, mm-hmm. Matt and I are laughing at this thing for the same reasons, I mm-hmm. think, the same exact reasons. And then like over time, it was like, oh, okay, Matt and Bowen have an ear for like, you know, Izzy Stevens saying, I'm not a surgeon. I wish I was a surgeon, but I'm not. So I quit. Like we the auditory, like, oh, like you FaceTime.
It's cadence. You and I respond to cadence extremely strongly. And I've realized that if I'm going to be close friends with someone, they have to put cadence number one. Cadence has, it's all about, it's why I love Patrick. Because like cadence is important to him. And it's like anyone in my life, like you have to understand the way things are said. That's what it's
like
about.
You called me the other day and I picked up and the first thing you said was,
girl, I don't remember. What was it?
It was, I really want to lose 3 pounds. And then without missing a beat, I said, oh my God, what are you talking about? You're so skinny. Shut up. Which I know it's like basic to quote Mean Girls at this point, but like Matt and I have a once a month discussion about, let's just like have a mini discussion right now about this.
Let's do it.
I mean, we've had a version of this discussion in many episodes before, but like
we've threatened to do this on the pod and we're doing it.
We're doing it. Rachel McAdams, every single line read in that movie,
mm-hmm.
Oscar worthy.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole like that, but that specific part, like, I really want to lose 3 pounds. Oh my mm-hmm. God, what are you talking about? You're so skinny. Shut up. I mean, just a full vignette in that
100%
dialogue.
Also, we talk about, let me tell you something about Janice Ian. That whole monologue, a comedic performance that people would die to give. I just feel like, and maybe if it's released today, because there's more awareness that this happens, like the comedy movies are given the shaft when it comes to awards, maybe she would get something. But it's right. like, it's why I'm rooting for like Maria Bakalova this year. It's like,
yes,
award comedy tour de forces.
Yes,
you must.
Yes, yes.
Because Rachel McAdams, like, first of all, queen. Second of all, like, you can't really picture anyone else doing it.
No.
And she wasn't a thing before that. And yet, no. She came in and was like, no, I'm iconic forever.
Let me tell you something about Janice Ian. We were best friends in middle school. I know, right? It's so embarrassing. I don't even, whatever. So then in eighth grade, I started going out with my first boyfriend, Kyle, who was
so hot, but then he moved to Indiana.
Who was so hot, but then he moved to Indiana. And Janice was like weirdly jealous of me. Like, if I would lure her off to hang out with Kyle, she'd be like, why didn't you call me back? And I'd be like, why are you so obsessed with me? So then for my birthday party, which was an all-girls pool party, I was like, Janice, I can't invite you because
I think you're a lesbian. I couldn't invite her to my party. There was going to be girls there in their bathing suits. I mean, she was a lesbian.
So then her mom called my mom and started yelling at her. It was so artwork. And she dropped out of school because no one would talk to her. And she came back in the fall for high school and her hair was all cut off. And she was totally weird.
And all of her hair was cut off. And she was totally weird.
And
now I guess she's on crack.
Oh my God, I love your skirt. That whole thing is genius.
Are we saying Tina Fey is a talented writer?
Oh my God. Crazy.
I mean, it's also like, there is a deep understanding in this text of what it means to be this type of girl.
Yes,
I'm not saying Tina Fey is this type of girl. I'm saying she researched whatever this book is. It's based on a book, Queen Bees and Wannabes. Maybe this is worth a read because there is such smart, deft understanding of what it is to deal with this type of girl, to be this type of girl, to navigate this type of girl. The social dynamics in the movie are like really well researched.
Yes.
And you know, I've never felt so seen as when they did the three-way call attack. That used to happen to me all the time. I was friends with these two girls, Allie and Rachel, who I then had to say to them ultimately, like, we can't be friends anymore. And it was a whole thing. But they would routinely three-way call attack.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and I was just like, what? It was something where it was like, I didn't know it was so popular. And then when I saw it in that movie, I was like, okay, almost felt like, wow, that wasn't just something that I was the victim of. And then
I feel like they stopped happening after the movie came out. In my life, they stopped happening because I would also get three-way calls from, like, I think it was like Vicky Reese Jones and Jeanette Lannon and like
full
those
names.
People. Full names. It's fine. But yeah, like, I think there was a drop off after the movie came out where people were like, oh, well, like our asses are on notice. Because Mean Girls came out right as we were going into high school.
2004.
Yeah. Like eighth grade. Oh my God.
Please, the worst. And we always talk about like how it's sort of normalized a mode of behavior for that type of girl going forward too. Like this is the dark side of it all, is that it really showed some girls how to be mean. Like if they needed any help, like there was Rachel McAdams that sort of expertly modeled that behavior. I had a friend, I will not say her name because she'll be mad, but I saw her start to act like this girl. Like in the way she was speaking, in the way she'd look at people, I was like, oh, you for better or worse, influenced by this movie. Because not everyone is going to be able to see irony in it. You know what I mean?
No. Like,
that's the dark side of it.
Because even now there's like fun little like Gen Z, like there's a fun little Gen Z pocket where like the bullies in school now are like kids who are like, you haven't read enough Marxist theory to be in our friend group. But it's like, it's still from the same, it's like a different kind of like mean person. It's a different kind of bully who's mm-hmm. like intellectual and is like, whatever, like, oh, you don't respect people's pronouns enough, so we can't talk to you. It's like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it's still the same root, which is Regina George to me.
Yeah, it's just so funny because she made it look cool. Like yeah. She is the iconic part of the movie. Like
not even cool. She made it look fun, which fun. Is different. Like
effective.
She made it look. Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
And we do stand.
We do stand. Wait, why don't I know you?
Why don't I know you?
Know you? Wait, what?
Shut up.
Shut you're like up. Really
pretty.
Pretty. So you're, so you're I mean, great. Everything
you think like you're really pretty.
they're. I don't know. I feel like it's aged in a way that. I mean, there's some things about the movie that are like, oh, that's rough. But
yes.
which is every movie from that time, but I mm-hmm. feel like the fact that it's still like in like the mimetic language of like, oh, like you show someone a picture of like Regina George crossing her arms and saying, so you agree, you blank, like whatever, like whenever that's like a reaction to something like that, like it feels like you can't remove it. It's not going to like wean off anytime soon that this is still like a reference that people immediately understand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Part of the culture even.
Yes. Well, that's what I mean to say, but it's like not even like Heathers did that. Not even like, I'm going to say not even Clueless did that.
For Gen X, I think it did. But it never was going to, I think that it's going to feel more culty to us, obviously, because of our age. And also because probably at the time, like, you literally had to go see the movie in order to understand and have it circulate the sort of like, mm-hmm. in order to, for that generation to sort of meme something, like yeah. there would have to be an active seeking out of it. And I think it probably made it more exciting and or just as exciting in a different way. But I understand what you're saying where it's like, it feels like because our generation would then be the generation of, you know, meming things and memes right. becoming comedy, it feel like it hit at exactly the right time because it's nostalgia, it's actually good, and it's hitting with our particular generation, which is like, you know, for better or worse, addicted to meme culture.
But I even think, I don't know, I think it like, in some ways it missed the cutoff and yet it still survived. It's still circulating despite that. It's still like, mm-hmm. I think some Gen Z people would see a Mean Girls meme and be like, I understand what that's from.
Yeah.
And it's yeah. not like cringe or whatever, you know? So it's like that's the thing that is unique to Mean Girls that I don't think happened with Clueless or with Heathers or with like other like movies from that neighborhood.
I wonder when Mean Girls will feel stylistically period / dated. You know what I mean? Like you look back
in like literally 6 months. Who knows?
Truly. Yeah. I mean, and I think actually if we watched it again now, and this is actually funny because Joel was over the other night and they were playing Mean Girls before
Drag Race.
And it was the end of the movie and like they show like the young plastics and like the skirts they're wearing. It's so 2004. And also just all the yeah. choice of music, obviously, like when Milkshake is playing, when the little girl is dancing, like that's so funny. But just like it is starting to get to that point where you're like, you watch it and you're like, oh my God, this movie is so 2004 to the mm-hmm. point where like, so there's like the way that Rachel McAdams is dressed as Regina George the whole movie. And then when she's nice at the end, spoiler alert, and she's and everyone's sort yeah. and she's like a lacrosse player, there's a point where she is walking in front of Katie and then they wave to each other. And there's like a sign of respect, like that they've moved on. Mm-hmm. And the way that she's dressed, you could tell at the time they were like, you know, she should be dressed sort of like more neutral in this scene. Yes. And like she's not wearing quote unquote cool clothes. And I turned to Joel and I was like, she looks way more chic there than she is in the whole rest of the movie. Yeah, and then I realized like they were just trying to put her in like shitty, boring clothes like at the end of the movie to show that she was no longer like this queen bitch of the school. But it just kind of says like, the way, like the kind of fashion now, like what's in vogue right now, I think is just more neutral.
Yes,
so,
yes.
So it's kind of, in a way, it just kind of said like, that's the way that fashion has progressed. Like it's a little bit less pastelish, mm-hmm, you know, than mm-hmm, it was then. Mm-hmm. How would you categorize the style of that time?
It was like,
talking about mid-aughts.
Mid-aughts. It was like, I'm just going to name retailers. Like,
yeah.
It was Hollister, like Abercrombie and
American Eagle.
It was like that. It was like graphic tees,
mm-hmm,
bright colors. I mean, remember how like flip-flops were like a moment?
Do you used to wear jeans and flip-flops? You could find me in jeans and flip-flops at all times.
Even freshman year of college, like walking down 14th Street in jeans and flip-flops, thinking in a V-neck and thinking, I look so good.
Literally.
I look like I just walked out of The Gap, aspirational at the time, mm-hmm, like mm-hmm, truly wild.
Well, I've told you the story of when I had my first, like my RA sat us down on the floor the very first floor meeting of freshman year, and we all had to go around and like say our name and like what we were trying to major in or whatever, mm-hmm, and where we were from. I got up and was doing like my like mask drag thing. I had like my spiky hair, I had my American Eagle polo, jeans and flip-flops. Probably everyone laughed at me, and it was just because I was dressed that way, and it was NYU, so everyone there was like, for some reason, I ended up on a floor where everyone was like, had their style figured out, I guess, or like, could I know.
I remember people from that floor from freshman year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was so taken aback because at the time, like, the way I was dressed was the cool way to be dressed. Now looking back, it's like, oh, that was the cool way to be dressed on Long Island from where I was from.
Yeah.
And then I guess everyone else on that floor like had themselves figured out a little bit more, or got the memo, I guess, 6 months earlier that you needed to stop dressing like this, like in New York in college. Like I was looking very high school, and maybe a lot of it had to do with the fact that I was obviously gay, dropping my voice, like being that. But they laughed at me. And I was just like, whoa, like. And that's when I realized I would have to reestablish an identity again. And then the tug of war inside me that was like, do I just come out now or like try to establish myself as a straight guy again, which I know is so mm-hmm. hard.
But it's not even like the cool New York way to dress in 2008 as an 18 or 19 year old was even that much more sophisticated than what Long Island cool was, which is to like the difference is American Eagle, Hollister, but then like if you're much cooler if you actually went to Forever 21 and Diesel and like ew, and even now that's like laughable. It's like it never, I don't know.
Yeah.
No one's like, unless you're just dressing in like all black everything, you're always going to be like ridiculed in retrospect for what you wore.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. And I think also like the awareness of that being true caused me to dress boring. And I look back and I'm like, I used to wear just like a lot of black or just like whatever color I knew worked for me, like a lot of blue. Mm-hmm. Like the amount of blue shit, I'm wearing blue right now. Like, mm-hmm. and also my whole like aesthetic in this apartment is blue, 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 blue. I do blue a lot.
Blue group.
And I think it's just because of fear, when I developed in terms of how I dressed myself, and we've actually had this conversation, I believe, with Max Wittert on his episode. We talked a lot about like style and how that, you know, is influenced by the culture around you and how you want to be perceived, obviously. But it's so funny because I look back on like my late teens and early 20s, and I did dress in a lot of like basics and a lot of like, you know, inoffensive colors and patterns. And now that I guess I care a little bit less or know myself a little bit more, I do dress in more colors. And it's so funny because I just got a new car after my accident and it is bright red. And Joel saw it and he was like, this is ostentatious. He's like, this is not you. And I was like, well, you don't know me at all then.
Girl, Han said, is that also a moving from New York to LA thing? Interesting. I don't
maybe
think so.
I think I honestly think it has more to do with just with me being like, no, I'm actually comfortable expressing myself the way I want to.
Yeah.
You have a very cool sense of style, though. You always know the cool things.
That's not necessarily true. I know what works for me, and it's not even too far elevated above like basics and like God. I mean, there really was a time when like it was cool, at least in my understanding, it was cool to wear American Apparel everything. Like that was like a look.
Yeah. In our early 20s, it was.
It was. And now it's like a little bit, but now you're kind of going back to that. There's like entire world and there's LA apparel. There's like already like a hearkening back to that, which is interesting. Now I'm just like, I'm reading a lot of like Japanese fashion magazines where like the style is called like City Boy, and it's just like you wear a baggy hoodie and like a flannel over it and like sweatpants, and that's the look. And like, but that even that's gonna like, I know we're saying such obvious things about like how style changes over time, but I just want to say that like I don't think I will ever be ahead of the curve in any way. I don't think that's like part of like my ethos. I'm happy to just like clock the trends as they happen and be like, let me try it on. And then that's it.
Here's what I'll say. Here's my assessment of you. Okay, I don't think you are ahead of the curve. I think, however, you are always right on the pulse. Like you always know, like if I ever mention a designer, I can kind of tell from the way that you react whether or not it's cool or not.
Say a designer now.
Like, for example, when I said, I'm just going to say this. Okay. When I said Tom Brown, you were like, yeah, maybe last year.
I did not say that. I did not say that. Tom Brown is great.
Bowen, you did not say Tom Brown was great.
I did not say that Tom Brown was last year or make that face.
You're scared now that Tom Brown isn't going to want to dress you down.
No, Tom Brown will never dress me down. That's not what it is. And if I take a shit next to the bathroom, next to Tom Brown in the bathroom, it'll be like, oh, hi.
I don't know. Your response to when I was shopping and I think I sent you a picture. I mentioned Tom Brown and you were like, no.
I did not do that. You are lying, gaslighter. Big timer.
Bowen, how would I make this up?
Oh my God, no. Boy, you know exactly what you did on my boat. Gaslighter. You were gaslighting me.
Here's what I want to ask you, because you're talking a lot about sweats and things. What is your relationship to what I believe is the clothing movement of the moment and the past couple of years, which is athleisure? What is your relationship to athleisure?
I don't have too much of it. I have two sweatpants that I love that I will wear outside of the house maybe once a week. And that's about it. That's it.
I'm becoming more comfortable with it. I never was that kind of person because I just, but I'm telling you, once I bought my Brooks Marks tracksuit.
You are wearing the Brooks Marks tracksuit.
It is so comfy and it's holding up. The only thing about it is I'm not entirely sure how you go about washing it, because there's that lining that I think is going to become problematic in washing it. But I love it so much. By the way, this second part of the reunion.
Oh my God. We haven't talked about Salt Lake.
Fireworks.
Lisa.
What is your take? What is your temperature?
It's been a while since it's been like almost a week. It's been 5 days, right? Mm-hmm. Since it aired. Mary is truly despicable. Oh, we have to do this. We rescind the second day of culture. Miriam Cosby hits the world stage. We rescind it.
I mean, she certainly hit the world stage. We can't deny that it happened, but we sort of propped her up as the icon of Housewives, and I don't know if I can stand by this abject colorism.
Ooh.
It was bad.
It was bad.
When she couldn't stop flapping her trap, when she unprompted offered that she prefers light-skinned men, she sort of just couldn't stop her mouth and basically said she prefers light-skinned men. And no one had asked that.
No one had asked that. And then she ended it with, you know, all Black people are beautiful. All Black people are beautiful.
And I'm so proud of it.
It's like, Mary, you got us.
That's the thing, is she had an out. Like, because they were talking about when she allegedly said, because Jen accused Mary of saying she doesn't like to go to convenience stores like 7-Eleven because shady Black guys hang out in front of them. Yeah. And she doesn't like going there because of that. And she said it had nothing to do with race. And Meredith said, I left the conversation thinking she doesn't like to go to convenience stores because of shady people hanging out in front of them. It didn't have to do with race. I didn't think she made it about
Meredith
race.
Meredith really gave her an exit strategy.
And it was there it was. Yeah. And then literally, she literally goes, but I do prefer light-skinned men.
And I'm only laughing because it's so shocking and so awful.
Couldn't believe it. And then when he was like, are you in love with your husband? I think I am.
But when she goes on about her marriage, that was also, and then she eventually starts to break down and cry, and everyone's like, oh, Mary, it's okay. I did not follow the thread there because she was like, I'm not in love, because she basically started out saying, I'm not in love with my husband. It's not
working. She said it's impossible to stay happy for that long.
It's impossible to stay happy for that long. But then she like goes on about, she kind of like bounces around all over the place. And then she goes, yeah, I'm happy. But it's like, wait, what are you, then what is it? Are you unhappy? Or are you happy? Is it impossible to be happy in that marriage, in a marriage for that long? Or
she needs to be on someone's couch is what needs to happen. So I watched this girl, the Brooke Ashley, who does my favorite recaps. And she has a line that I will say here. I must credit her. She says she is crazier than a soup sandwich. And she is crazier than a soup sandwich. She needs to be sitting down on a couch figuring out what is really going on.
Because
I don't believe she's in love with her husband. I believe she, because then she revealed that it was not in her grandmother's will that she marries him. Which, if I love that we all were just kind of saying that without unpacking that, which is, even if it was in her will, that it was her wish that her husband marry her granddaughter, you can't force anyone to do that. Like, just because someone puts it in their will does not mean that that must happen. Like, you can't be forced to marry someone because a family member of yours put that in her will. Like, she can say that this is her wish, but you can't force anyone to do that. So Mary had to have autonomy in doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, from what she said about how basically the marriage is worth it because she gets Chanel bought for her, that a lot of this is about money. A lot of it's about money.
It's like, it almost dipped into like 90 Day Fiancé territory for me, where like some of these marriages are purely motivated by money or by like acquiring things. And I'm just like, this is just people are people. Like, money like really breaks people. And it's just sad.
And then it did line up with that video that audio that had leaked of her yelling at her church because they weren't giving her enough money. Like, right. I was like, this is someone whose number one priority is things. And
her bedroom is a fucking nightmare.
I mean, she's always in her closet.
It's racks and racks of clothes.
Yeah, it's wild. And so I think, like, my takeaway from the whole thing is, oh, this is someone who's not willing to be honest about the fact that she's motivated by greed.
And that her aunt lives in a smaller house than her, and she comes to clean up the house, even though her aunt is, like, technically would be closer to inheriting the mega church or whatever. This is
a mess.
There's such a darkness to Salt Lake City, even though I think it was a fantastic first season. There was a great New Yorker piece about what made this first season so good.
Mm-hmm.
But I a lot of the religious stuff is so hard.
Well, I think that's what makes it really interesting. And I think it's actually really interesting when you look at it through the lens of Heather, too, because I want to talk about Heather for a second.
Let's talk about Heather.
Heather, the way that she was expertly dragging Lisa and like reading down everyone, I was like, I had to be like, I don't think that you are this innocent woman that you have been pretending to be.
I don't think so either.
I think that her and Whitney a little bit have been putting on this whole we're oppressed by our community and society and religion narrative and boo-hoo, Jen would rather be friends with Meredith and Lisa than us. I think they have perpetuated a little bit of a victim narrative for themselves that didn't check out with me on this reunion, because all of a sudden they felt powerful because they saw the show and they realized that they were edited in the most favorably and they were most liked by the viewers. And they came in really feeling their oats in this reunion to the point where I feel that especially Heather was being cruel to Lisa. And I'm not like, I don't think that Lisa is not a snob, but I don't think that she deserves the dragging that Heather was giving her, and that I think Heather takes glee in when it comes from the viewers as well, because I understood where she was coming from. And when they took that lunch break and they thought the cameras went down, all I'm saying is,
I know Heather was kind of a
Heather was she turned to Lisa and said, "You're in last place." And Lisa said, "What does that mean?" And she was like, whatever. And Lisa was like, "What does that mean?" And she's like, "And you've been a bad friend to Meredith." And Lisa said, "Why do you have to attack my one friend on the show? Why do you have to attack my ally? Like, why do you have to attack my friendship? Like, you won't be happy until everyone hates me." And honestly, I think she's right. I think Heather is out to destroy Lisa. And I don't think she needs to play it that hard.
No, I really don't. Because that's not why we like Heather.
Not why we like Heather.
But even though Lisa, when they roll the clips back, Lisa was kind of a terror to Heather and Whitney. Like that ski like meal that they had afterwards. I don't know. Lisa, it's a very complicated dynamic. I don't have much to add in terms of.
Let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Do you believe that Lisa knew Heather before 2017 when she says they met? Do you believe Heather that they've known each other for 20 years? Or do you believe Lisa that maybe they were in the same abstract circle, but Lisa only really met Heather in 2017?
That, whatever that. Because they didn't they show a screenshot of the text where they were like,
yeah, so excited to meet you in person.
So excited to meet you in person, yeah.
Yeah, so basically then,
Heather's lying.
This all hinges on the big lie.
Yeah.
Which is the fact that Heather said, "Lisa doesn't see me." And I think this, and is lying about knowing me. And they actually did not have the history that Heather had said. Because I think that Heather, you know, in coming out of the church, she just wants to be seen. And she wants to demand, you know, respect. Because maybe she feels like she hasn't gotten it, which I understand. I just feel that if that's anger and emotion that she has, I think it might be a little misplaced towards Lisa. Like, because I feel that it's probably true that Heather has felt disrespected and undervalued throughout her whole life. And so she's really coming hard now in her power and demanding that people like let her take up space and understand that she is a formidable person. I just think she doesn't have to try to kill Lisa socially because of
it. Right. I watched, I don't watch Jersey, but I watched the premiere.
Same.
Did you watch it?
I am the same thing. I don't watch Jersey, but I watched the premiere.
Well, Heidi Gardner told me, she was like, "You have to watch Jersey." I was like, "Okay," but I haven't watched it in like truly like since like Prostitution Whore, like, will it be good? And she was like, "No, I haven't watched it in like almost a decade, but you should watch it." And I was like, "Great." And then the ending, the fight between Jackie and Teresa, I was like, wow. There was kind of a similar thing where Jackie's like, I have the life that you want. Mm-hmm. I win. And I was like, holy shit. And then Teresa, of course, is like calling her the C word. And it's like, oh, this is all just so such yeah, a mess.
She really was using the C word, wasn't she?
It was. I mean, the episode was called See You Next Tuesday. And but like, but just her the beliefs of beep, beep, beep. But then just reading her lips, just kind of saying the C word was truly like, it was kind of jarring for me to, as a viewer, to be like, oh my God, she's really calling her that.
Well, Teresa is a jarring figure.
Teresa, I haven't watched Jersey, but it feels like there is going to be a huge blowout between Joe Gorga and Teresa this season that will be very fascinating to see because for them to be siblings and have maybe a lot of stuff like buried, not buried, but just like they seem to be getting along. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the reason I haven't been able to ever watch Jersey is because
the reminder,
it feels too real to me. I know people like this, like from Long Island. Like it's just,
I heard you somehow in the episode. I was like, these are people that Matt knows.
Oh, big time. Big time. Like, and so it's always hard because for me, even if it's not, it's not explicit always, right, but there is like, there's a layer of homophobia that's running through the whole thing that I just feel uncomfortable with. Like, you know, like I can, even if they're not saying it, I can hear all these people saying the word faggot.
Well, I feel like when Teresa was like spreading the rumor about what's his face like cheating on Jackie at the gym, I was like, is she implying that it's dudes because it's at the gym and it's like steam room action or what? Because I'm just like, there's something missing here that they're either editing out or Teresa is like too afraid to say as the cameras are rolling. Mm-hmm. That I'm like, oh yeah, like what is this weird hidden frequency? And then, Just thought it was just so dark and deeply funny, but also like that this is many people in this country and around the world where she was like, I didn't spread a rumor. I heard a rumor.
Oh, please. We were laughing. Oh my God. We were laughing so hard at that because it so doesn't make any sense. And I guess like that is what makes a good housewife, like a true agent of chaos.
Yes.
Like we're, but that doesn't make sense. And
no,
like,
yeah.
So it's just so funny because what ends up being the conflicts, it's like there's something that happens, then people react to it, and mm-hmm. based on the abstract way people react, that's what then causes the conflict. So like what won't end up being the conflict is this thing of, was there cheating happening? I think it'll be the line, I have the life that you want. You know what I mean?
It's that's I win. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I like about Housewives. It's like like the other night, like someone said to me, like, I had a Bloody Mary that was the best I ever had. And I said, well, what? It's better than the one that I made for you on vacation. And he was, and my friend was like, well, it wasn't restaurant quality. So then I said, if this was Housewives, a whole season would be me being pissed that you said my Bloody Marys were not restaurant quality.
Yes,
specificity and that stupid conflict that I love. And so you need someone like Teresa to come in and have like the only she would say, I didn't spread a rumor. I heard a rumor.
Yeah.
For that to spin off in this like insane direction about whether spreading a rumor is the same as hearing a rumor, which is nothing. Uh-huh. But I love watching a full unfurling of a conflict based on that stupidity.
Well, this is maybe why like Miriam Cosby is bumping me because like, It's gone too far. Like, because at first we all fucking went crazy over her. We loved her because it was like,
You smell like hospital.
You smell like hospital is the perfect.
Exactly what we're talking about. Yeah.
It spins out into this whole conflict. But Mary, it's like, oh, you're not making sense 95% of the time at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's actually really dark the ways you don't make sense and the ways that you contradict yourself and the ways that you will, I don't know, tell on yourself in these situations where you mm-hmm. say, I prefer light skinned guys, unprompted, that it's like, this is actually not fun anymore. And the whole Pentecostal thing is like, really, for me, I'm speaking for myself. Mm. just being Pentecostal is kind of really, really scary to me, because it is this thing where, like, it is linking emotional experiences, or it's saying that emotional experiences are religious experiences no matter what, which is so dangerous. Mm-hmm. That anytime you feel any emotion strongly, that is God, that is not something that is independent of,
right,
an institution, is like really, really, really terrifying to me.
Yeah. And did you see when Andy was like, well, have there been rumors that your church is a cult? Mary just goes, yeah.
Oh my God, you did a great Mary.
It was just so, so, oh, of course. Absolutely, there's been rumors that this church is a cult. Why wouldn't there be?
And then isn't it Lisa who's just like, I mean, there are rumors that Mormonism is a cult.
It's not a cult.
We have to shout out Vanessa Bayer for doing great.
Oh my God. Vanessa's impression of Lisa on Watch What Happens Live.
And Whitney.
Oh, and Whitney. But it was the Lisa that was killing me.
It was so good.
Here's a question for you. And I've really thought about this. So if you and I are in a situation where we're sitting at a reunion type thing and everyone's going in on you. Say you're Lisa
and I'm Meredith.
I'm your best friend. And I'm sitting there like the way Meredith was.
Meredith was not coming to bat for Lisa. No.
Would you be upset with me?
I would be like, you're not. I'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be upset with. I would be. It would be an off camera thing where I'd be like, you're really passive right now when people are truly tearing me to shreds.
I would be mad. I would be really mad, because I know for a fact that if everyone was ganging up on you, I would be like, no. And that makes me feel like maybe Lisa has a different view of their friendship than Meredith does, or Meredith just truly ain't engaging.
I think there is a darkness to Meredith as well. I think Meredith is darker than Lisa, TBH. Not as dark as Heather at this point, because Heather is really trying to like manipulate in ways that are alarming. But Lisa is like, Meredith is like, there's something about Meredith that's like Beyonce watching Jay-Z and Solange fight in the elevator and just standing there.
Well, yeah. She did say on an episode that she has a history of observing violence, and that it really has caused her to disengage, and that's what works for her. So I bet she's been through, I wouldn't be surprised if she's been through like some sort of like therapy that has told her like, you never have to engage in anything that is bad for you, and that she is just going to sit on the sidelines about this. But the fact of the matter is, like, this show might not be for her then, because I think it's funny now. Like, the fact that she is the housewife that disengages, I think is funny.
It's funny now, but she can't be too sleepy for the whole thing, you know? Right.
And her not, and it's so funny, because she really just had one moment in this episode, and it was, let me make something extremely clear. My husband is off limits, and if anyone talks about it, you're not my friend, and that's that. And she like really laid the hammer down, and it was her one moment in the episode. But otherwise,
nothing.
Other than that, nothing. And for Lisa to be like so the center of conflict, and Meredith to not chime in really at all.
I know.
I would have been pissed.
And Meredith's only kind of, the only takeaway for Meredith this season is, the only memory is, I'm disengaging.
I'm done engaging. I'm no longer engaging. If you guys want to engage in the conversation, you can engage in the conversation. Soft. Me and Soth.
You have to read this New Yorker piece about, it starts off saying how Brooks Marks is like,
I did read it.
I thought it was great. I thought that was a really good observation. She was like, the audience turns on Brooks. I mean, I don't know if you feel this way, but I kind of was like, oh yeah, that was when I kind of wasn't as enamored with Brooks Marks as a reality character, reality show character, was when Brooks was like, Jen was like showing her vagina all over the place. I was like, oh, but you, like this is a little too, This is reverting to like a different trope in reality television that is no longer relevant, because you were like a very good student of the form up until that point.
And here's my take on that, because they talked about this in this episode of the reunion too. Meredith was like, it was inappropriate the way she was behaving. Her vagina was out. I don't think it was clear enough in that episode that it was such a thing.
That Jen's vagina was out?
Yeah. I don't think it was clear enough that like she was actually being inappropriate in front of the kids. Like I think if it had been made a little bit, and I think this might have been the producers and the editors maybe like wanting to steer away from a narrative of a woman's like vagina was exposed, because that has been a thing on Housewives, and I feel like they feel like it invades their privacy. And I really don't need a narrative of like whose pussy was out. Like I don't like it. Like they did it with Erica Jane a couple years ago on Beverly Hills, and you could tell that it like really bothered her that it was a topic of conversation. But
yeah, of course.
I think that because that's true, that they've kind of learned from this, and the editors didn't want to make it as much of a thing. But I think ultimately, like the issue was, it was a thing. And Brooks was responding to it. And so that's, I think it seemed like Brooks was making this issue in order to like stir the pot, when in reality, he was reacting to the fact that it happened, which Meredith confirmed on the reunion. She was like, yeah, it was a lot.
Meredith, maybe I am a Meredith. I keep
buying what you run away. I can't tell you enough. You really are. And it was so funny to me. Everyone, oh my God, readers, it was so funny because Bowen goes, I'm a Jen. And I was like, you have way too much respect for silverware, glassware to ever throw it at a party.
I wasn't proudly saying I'm a Jen. I said I might be a Jen, unfortunately.
You are the least Jen. Explain to me how you're a Jen.
That when I get angry, I get angry.
That's not even true. That's not even true.
I'm exploring anger in therapy right now. It's very, very interesting.
That's so interesting. What a window in. Is this therapy?
This is therapy. Okay, I think it's time.
Yeah, I was going to say, it feels time to do I Don't Think So, Honey, which is, I forget.
It's our 1 minute segment in which we go off on something in culture.
Right. I saw I Don't Think So, Honey written down and I was like, what is that?
What is that?
Okay, so I have something.
You have something? Okay, this is Matt Rogers. I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Monica Rambeau erasure. Okay? Because the only thing that people are talking about on Twitter is Agatha all along, which I understand. But also, you know what else is happening all along? We're getting the origin story of Photon, honey, or Spectrum. It is unclear. But all I'm saying is we got this black woman who gets this unbelievable scene where she gets her powers in the sort of hex thing. And it was an unbelievable scene. It was an artful scene. 30
seconds.
I found it to be emotional. And I thought it was well performed. And I thought Tiana Paris came to life like when she got her powers. And all I'm saying is this is the origin story of one of the probably most important characters in the MCU going forward. And you go on
seconds.
Twitter and it was Agatha all along and it was Catherine Hahn. And all I'm saying is examine it, because we are getting the origin story of the most important female superhero. And all over you were like, oh, Agatha, Agatha, Agatha. No, Monica.
And that's 1 minute. No, Monica.
And I,
it
you know, we stand.
All along.
We stand Catherine Hahn and we stand Agatha all along.
Yes.
We stand the reveal. But all I'm saying is there was another thing that happened in the episode that was iconic and it was not being talked about. And it was that Monica Rambeau finally got her powers. And if you follow the comics, you understand that this is a big, 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 big deal, because she goes on to like lead the Avengers in the comics.
She can see electromagnetisma. She can look at the waves and
she
go,
can sort of see
manipulate.
The way. Well, it's unclear what her powers are. You know that she's like got blue eyes. but I was like, what is it? And then I was reading about it. Apparently, in the comics, she can turn herself into energy.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which I don't know how that works, but excited to find out.
Me too. Me too, girl.
All right, and this feels like Bowen's ready. Oh, I just got an email from the Taylor Swift official store.
What did you order?
My Evermore hoodie is coming.
Oh my God, we are getting a lot of mess. I think we might need to do an Evermore episode soon. Everyone is still on this Evermore thing where they're like, we need, like someone at work was like, my friend was listening. My friend told me that you guys still need to do an Evermore episode. I go, well, you say it.
Just because you say we need to do it does not mean we're going to do it. Okay. And this goes for guests as well. Okay. Thank you for your ideas.
We are not customer service.
Some people are really banging the drum about us having certain people on, and it's like,
no, you're right. I don't think so, huh? It actually, most of the time, I'm like, don't.
Let us provide for you. How about this? Next week, we have Rose Domu on. Okay, girl?
Rose Domu, we're so excited. That's
so excited. Talk about a WandaVision and Taylor Stan. We will be talking about Evermore with
we'll
Rose.
We'll talk about Evermore with Rose. But Rose, truly, like, always, I think she is a North Star in the culture. I think whatever Rose thinks goes.
Taste.
And maybe that's... She is taste. You'll find out. You'll find out. And we recommend everyone look up her interviews with Timmy Chalamet. She brings up, she asks him if he likes Moonstruck, and he says, I love Moonstruck. She has great interviews with Salma Hayek, with Amy Poehler and Maya Rudolph. She has had some great, great, great interviews with some folks.
And we're going to talk with her about that next week.
Next week.
But before we get to next week, Yang has his I Don't Think So, Honey. Do you have something prepared?
I have something prepared.
Love to hear it. This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey, and his time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Crime scene, the vanishing of the CISO Hotel, that CISO Hotel documentary. It is pure drivel trash, the way that it barely spends any time actually focusing on the death of Elisa Lam. So upsetting, so unfortunate. And yet the documentary spends so much time on, like, the conspiracy, on the voyeurism of true crime and how it sort of has ballooned out of control.
30.
And how it tainted the whole investigation of Elisa Lam, so that it sort of removes all the humanity from, like, this poor person who unfortunately passed away on the property. Like, it goes into this terrible, shallow analysis of, like, what Skid Row is and what it meant for, like, what it could have possibly meant for the death, that she might have gotten drugs from Skid Row. It was truly such, like, pulpy bullshit. And it was so, like, dehumanizing. It was so disappointing. And I think, like, we're hitting some, like, critical mass with true crime stuff. Okay, that's 1 minute.
So basically you're saying that it was about true crime?
It was true crime where there was a layer where it was just so, you would have, it was very watchable, I'll say, but so much of it was, like, the sensationalism of, or it was just sensationalizing the death itself by being like, and here are all the crazy things that have happened at the CISA Hotel, all these serial killers and suicides and all this stuff. And Skid Row is a thing, and this girl might have gotten drugs from Skid Row and then had a bipolar episode. It was just like, there is a way to present this story without going into, and then it talked, and then, like, there's some valuable stuff about, yes, the voyeuristic aspect of true crime, where, like, all of these web sleuths were trying to solve the case as the investigation was happening, as the autopsy report was being put together. But then, like, it ruins this one person's life. But, like, I don't think we needed to see that. And it's all, like, I don't know if any of it's useful. And I think we're reverting back to, like, Dateline-y, like, maybe it's always been this way and I've just checked out, but, like, it feels like a really weird, anachronistic era of, like, covering grisly deaths like this, where it's like, wait a minute, let's actually just, like, try to present the facts and not have it be embellished in, like, all this other nonsense.
Yeah. I think that anytime they figure out something is working, like, that you're going to get a mass amount of it. And with true crime, that's actually kind of interesting and maybe harmful, because it is removing the humanity once it's just like, oh, this thing works commercially, and now here's all of it.
But I think it got a lot of bad reviews, and people are like, this was so poorly handled, that I think now, hopefully, we're at a point where people are like, the people who make these shows are like, this is not working anymore. You know?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
It's just, anyway, I was talking about it with Greta, and she was like, it's so bad. And I was like, yeah, it's just, like, true trash.
Did you watch I Care a Lot yet?
No. I hear Rosamund.
Everyone's hating it. Well, or like,
but people say Rosamund is good.
Well, that she's good, but, like, that what it's about is, like, I don't know. But maybe we'll watch it and we'll talk about it next week, because I'm sure Rose has watched it.
Sure. I mean, I think we've, like, also turned a corner with Netflix, where a lot of the programming on Netflix is, because there used to be a time when you would watch, when a show would be in the conversation that was on Netflix and you would go into it being like, well, it must be good. And now I don't think that's true anymore. I think now people are watching Netflix shows because they are in the conversation, but it's not, there's no assumption going in that it's going to be quality.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, now it's how they do it now. It's just, we're going to push this thing to the front and everyone's going to watch it. And that's their way of sort of controlling what gets consumed. But it's like the Emily in Paris of it all. It's like, yeah, Emily in Paris is not good, but everyone watched it.
Oh, fucking, I don't think so. Only the HFPA, because there's this whole thing that came out about the Emily in Paris people like basically bribed them.
Has been happening since the beginning of time. Like the HFPA is a joke
because it's an easy target because it's such a small body.
Exactly. And they can and have been bought forever. Yes. Like, so it's just kind of funny to see everyone like coming around to this now. Like, whenever the Golden Globe nominations come out and people are like, this snub, I'm like, you guys, that just means that they didn't play the game. Like, it's fine. Like, it's so cool to be snubbed by the HFPA. Like, it just means you're not like literally going for it, like in terms of like buying these awards. Like, they don't matter. Like, there's a reason why they're not in the EGOT. You know what I mean? They're not an actual reputable awards body. I always feel like if someone I like wins a Golden Globe, I'm like, yay. And if someone doesn't, it's fine. You're fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not like the Oscars or the Emmys, which are actual reputable awards bodies with a large voting base. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, an ep.
What an ep. Truly freewheeling. We kind of, there was many a winding turn. Wouldn't you say, Matt?
I would say that every day
is a winding road.
Is a winding road.
And with that,
every day is a winding road.
Get a little bit closer.
Every day is a winding road.
Get a little bit closer.
To hear that song, listen to the end credits of the movie. Say it.
I don't know.
Aaron Brockovich, bitch.
Aaron Brockovich. Oh my God.
Do your homework next time.
Sorry.
Bye.